Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, it's Joe, and welcome to another episode of Test Talks. Today we'll be speaking with Percy Ababa, a software testing manager for Johnson & Johnson, all about managing test teams in the 21st century. So in the past few years, many test teams have undergone major changes. With more and more companies moving towards agile and DevOps best practices, companies really are scrambling to understand how the role of testers fit into this new way of developing software. So in this episode, Percy really is going to share with us his experience in running a testing organization in the 21st century, and also what tools and techniques he thinks can help anyone with their testing efforts in this new agile DevOps world. Check it out. Test Talks is sponsored by the fantastic folks at Sauce Labs, the cloud-based automated testing platform that eliminates the need to maintain your own Selenium grid and test infrastructure. Try it for free today. Visit testtalks.com and click on the Sign Up Now link under the homepage sponsor section. Hey, Percy, welcome to Test Talks.
Hi, Joe. Thank you for having me.
So it's great to have you on the show today. But before we get into it, could you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
All right. So my name is Percy Ababa. I'm currently the test engineering manager for Johnson & Johnson's consumer platform. What we really do as a team is that we provide testing services as well as test tooling support for the current web platform that we have, where eventually all of the consumer sites for J&J will be migrated into.
Awesome. So right off the bat, I just want to ask you some questions on the test tooling support. So do you support multiple teams across Johnson & Johnson? If so, how do you select what tools they're going to use, and how do you promote best practices among different teams doing different types of testing?
Right. So it's a pure web application, the one that we're dealing with. So definitely from a tooling perspective, it's also good to understand who we're supporting. So we have three distinct teams that we are providing support at the moment. There's two Scrum teams, and we have one team that's just primarily focused on upgrades as well as DevOpsy type of work. So it depends on what we need to test. That's also where we kind of jump into the type of tools that we use. So obviously, since we're using web, it kind of begs the solution of a WebDriver type automation framework. And then on top of that, we're actually... We just started working with Apply Tools, and we are using that extensively to look at, you know, the visual component, because what part of the scope that we have in our work is really more on upgrades and just looking at functionality and performance and usability and all these other things. You know, it just shows you a certain part of the story or just a certain piece of information that the value proposition that we have with having visual tests and having a visual testing tool that can actually provide you with better way to compare multiple sites or multiple versions of a site in multiple environments is very helpful to us at the moment. So that's really just from the automated scripting support. Also for the team members that we have that's involved in the Scrum teams, there's other types of automation that we can rely on. Like, for example, since the platform that we have needs to be able to support, multilingual data and content creation, having a test data service that can actually create an article in all the languages that we support is something that's very helpful. So I guess the overall question is, depending on the need, we have a particular tool that, you know, we've been using, and some of the tools we've developed and some of the tools we've bought.
Awesome. So I guess there are two main points I want to pull out of that and explore a little bit more. The first one is Apply Tools. Actually, Moshi introduced me to you, and Moshi's awesome, so he'd kill me if I don't explore that a little bit more. Yeah. the second piece I'm going to ask you after that is how you handle localization testing, because that's something a lot of companies, I think, struggle with. So I'm just curious to know how you handle it. So the first question is, so for the visual validation piece of testing, can we explore it a little bit more? What exactly you've been using it for? Is it, have you been doing more of just a proof of concept? Is Apply Tool something you're using every day now? And if so, can we just explore more of a user case of how it's being used currently in your framework?
Right. So this is actually something that we do, we use every day now. We've primarily been using this on a majority of our site upgrades where, let's say we introduce a new version or a new functionality that we commit, you know, into the code that gets deployed into an environment, and we then start testing. Like if there's any introduced risks, that's pretty obvious, and start digging for, you know, things that we could, you know, explore a little bit further. But, you know, the quick and dirty way that we really used Apply Tools is if you have a finite set of URLs that you can gather, you take screenshots of all of those in a previous state. The previous state can either be an accepted set of data that you already have on your site, or whatever is in production. So then we push all of that data into the environment that contains the new piece of code. We gather all of those URLs and take our screenshots and compare that into the baseline. So it's then you can actually see if did something, you know, go horribly wrong in any of these pages, or are there acceptable changes that goes through? And the good thing with the one that we've seen with Apply Tools is that if you have a static baseline, right, something that you know that, you know, will not change, something that you can rely on, and if you use that to compare any new information to that baseline, then you have pretty much an idea of what is it that changed with what we did. Is this change actually acceptable? Because the beauty that I've seen with Apply Tools is that you're not limited to like a pixel by pixel comparison, right? So they have the exact comparison feature. You can switch that to whether you just want to focus on the content, if the content changes or if the layout changes, or they have this magical strict comparison feature where they were able to codify what's, I guess, viewable, what the human eye detects or mimics. So there's definitely also some challenges between, you know, these levels of comparison, because it depends on how strict you are, or if you go with the exact, you definitely have more false positives with it. But you know, from the get-go, we've really seen a lot of value more than waste when it comes to using this tool. So we're just getting started, and I think we've used this for the past 3 months or so. We've gotten to the point where the automation framework that we have at the moment, you just feed it with a base domain URL of production or the baseline, and then you feed it another target URL, and then we have a crawler that will just dig through all of that information and do a one-to-one comparison. So the reporting tool that we have pretty much highlights, you know, what is the difference, and if we want to dig deeper, we can just go through the Apply Tools dashboard.
Awesome. Now, this isn't an episode on visual validation testing, but it is a topic I've been hearing more and more about. So since you have been using it for 3 months, I know you're still probably learning it. Are there any things that caught you off guard that you think someone starting brand new with an Apply Tools implementation should know about? And what's your workflow? Like when there is a mismatch, is it who looks at that and approves it? And do you have a process in place that who handles that to say, yes, this is acceptable, or this is definitely a bug? Let's open up a bug report for this.
Yeah, for us right now, the workflow that we have, it's a tester that actually looks into the results. So when it comes to automation and results, one of the challenges that you need to be able to deal with is that, you know, when something passes, you need to make sure that that's passing for the right reasons.
Right.
And when something fails, you also need to know that it's also failing for the right reasons. After determining that it's, you know, failing correctly, is how soon can we actually dig deeper into that failure and find a resolution to that failure. So with regards to the workflow that we have with our visual validation, our tests right now, so well, we work in conjunction with Sauce Labs. We got to the point where we have enough VMs that are allowed so that we could run a lot of our tests in parallel, that some of our tests take, you know, more or less five to 10 minutes to validate 50 to 100 URLs, you know, at a given time. So the results are the one that actually is taking us longer to go through, because what we really end up doing is that we have a tester that just pours through a reporting dashboard that just looks through the failures. And one of the things that I guess Apply Tools doesn't really give you is that if, let's say, if you have a failure that happens at the global scale, right? So you know, like a particular div on the third column of your site, you purposefully change that feature to justify right instead of aligning left. Right now, if you have, let's say, 1,000 URLs that has that change, then all 1,000 URLs will fail. I think one of the things that I'm waiting for is one of the features that's happening that I believe Apply Tools is working on, is a way for us to easily group, you know, these tests into a single, you know, common thread. So, yeah, so that's something that, you know, we're definitely looking for. And I guess to go back to your original question, what are the things that we need to watch out for when you're first looking at Apply Tools? It's, I think it applies with testing as a whole, because testing, when it comes to testing, you're deriving information, you know, out of the system that you're testing. And based on this information, the people that matter end up making their decisions on whether the risks that are included in that information, or at least the known risks, are, I guess, acceptable enough for you to whether release or just go to the next step in your pipeline. But the one message that I really want to be able for the people that want to use a lot of these tools is that this is just, you know, one piece, just one part of the story. There's other areas where you need to focus. Don't make this, you know, the only thing that you will be doing. So there's other things that you should definitely, you know, need to do. I mean, introducing better test design and better test strategy, you know, will definitely result to better test execution. And out of that, you can derive better reports for your stakeholders to understand whether they're new problems or it's good enough to move forward.
How do you handle that now, though? Is there, for example, a lot of these things are automated now where there's a continuous integration environment and people have, if, you know, 20% of things fail, then the build doesn't go in. How do you measure real risk, though, in this type of case? How do you know, like, that 20% that failed, that it's not like a high-risk thing that failed? And therefore, even if it was just 20% or 10% that failed, that you still shouldn't have put that build in because it was a critical feature, a critical piece of software that's broken.
Yeah, numbers are definitely misleading, yeah. Because, you know, that remaining 20% might be the one that makes or breaks your business. I guess it's very challenging to be able to get into like a one-to-one correspondence with, if an X percentage of it passed, then how is that related to something that's good enough? But what we really do at this point is that we have a collated, you know, test results, and I end up, me as a test manager, I work with our head of engineering, our, I guess, head of product and head of project management, and we go through the results, right? See which ones we know would affect it. And then as a group, we collectively make a decision on, okay, we'll push this out, but we're going to have our caveats when we know, yeah, we push this feature out, but we know these are going to be problematic if you do A, B, and C. So part of our definition of done is not just testing, but also documentation. for being a part of a heavily regulated industry, our documentation really needs to be very solid, because if someone finds cause to sue one of our brands, then we definitely need to be able to provide all the necessary information that we did to be able to test a piece that led up to that challenge.
Awesome. So that's another great point. Bigger companies, larger companies, a lot of times they have to deal with extra regulations. And you've been testing, it looks like, for almost 16 years. So and I think the software development lifecycle, the way we develop software, has changed in those 16 years. So how do you handle, I don't know, is Johnson & Johnson, if they use more agile type practices, how do you handle more agile, fast delivery type practices and yet still have that quality in place that you know that you're not missing anything, you're still moving fast, but that yet you're still making sure that there's quality involved from beginning to end of your development life cycle?
Yeah, wow, that's a very loaded question. Yeah. I'm going to make this a big caveat. I don't think I could say that I represent Johnson & Johnson,
right,
you know, in its entirety. But I can say, based on the experience that I have with the team that I'm working with, which is just, I guess, a dot in the plane of teams that's in Johnson & Johnson, there's definitely some challenges that you need to be able to hurdle over. I mean, I'm used to working with probably more agile teams in the previous companies that I work with. So before this, I was working with Viacom, and then before that with NBC Universal, and before that with the New York Times. And the one thing that I can remember when I worked at the New York Times was, I think even before Agile was the marketing buzzword that it is now, the team that I worked with were pretty agile, in a sense that, you know, we have a project that we want to work with. I sit almost next to, you know, the developer and the project manager, and it was a lot easier to be able to just, you know, push things out, right? But in like bigger companies like J&J, for example, there are some gates that you essentially have to go through, so that, you know, we just want to make sure that from an enterprise perspective, we're not breaking anything that we're not supposed to break. So I'm not sure if I just went around your question, or if you just want to clarify something else.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm always looking for insight. Like I said, I work for a big company, so there's a lot of regulations, and they want us to move agile, they want us to be lean, they want us to move fast, yet we still almost have to do waterfall type processes, because if the FDA ever came in and said, where's the proof that you tested this widget A, we need to be able to produce it. And so it's not like Google or a simple web app that you can just release. It's like I think me and you work on enterprise type software. So it's like this extra layer that I wonder if, as many people that are using Agile, if they've dealt with it before and how they handle it. So that's the type of insight I was looking for.
Right, right. I mean, definitely when you say we've done like Agile, it's probably better off if I said, you know, we've done a form of Agile, but it's really based also on the culture of the team and our understanding on how, you know, we produce software. Because, you know, if you simplify all of it, you know, we work as a team to be able to create software that brings value back to the company. And however we do it, as long as we align with the rules and regulations of the context that you're in, then you should be okay. I mean, there's going to be some, challenges when it comes to waiting for things. Like, say if you want to have something provisioned, and you know the corporate policy takes a lot longer than what you're used to, there has to be a way for you to be able to, you know, inform your boss of that risk, so that that person can then help into accelerating certain things. Or if not, just, you know, do something else. There's always something in the backlog that you can work on.
Maybe people won't agree with this, is I don't think there's probably a real pure version of Agile. It's based on your company and your company's culture, like you said. So it's not necessarily, so one company's doing Agile right and another one's doing it wrong. It's probably just a flavor of Agile principles, but I don't know if there's a right or wrong way per se.
Right. I completely agree with that. I mean, if you look at the Agile Manifesto, it really just talks about, even if you look at the principles that's laid out, it talks about guidelines, right? So it's not like it's something that's set in stone. And a lot of the challenges that I have with certifications out there is that it seems that they've found a solution on the what and the how to do Agile. But the one thing that I think is very key and that sits on top of that, defining the what and the how to do certain things, is the who, because that really defines like the culture that you have within the team, whether the principles that you adhere to, how you communicate, how you react to problems, how the managers try to unblock certain problems. So it's a continuous learning process that we have to go through as a team. And if you're a tester who thinks that, look, I'm a quality gate, nothing goes through because I'm going to have to stop the build because I can always find a bug, it ends up being harmful than helpful. I mean, thinking as, you're one team, you're all responsible to deliver, something that will help your company, do better. I think that really, just simplifies and breaks down a lot of the barriers that some traditional testing teams have.
Yeah, I completely agree. I just did a few webinars around this concept of, back in the day, it used to be, if you were a QA person, a tester, you were the gate and you blessed something, whether or not it would be released. Now it's more of a group decision. You're given the information that the people in charge need to, in order to make the decision, but ultimately, one person isn't the cop of quality. It's everyone on the team's responsible for quality. Also, I've noticed in almost all your online profiles, you mentioned you're a firm believer in the context-driven school of testing. So what does that mean to you? I've interviewed a few people, a few testers, and they mentioned this context-driven school of testing. I'm just curious to know what it means to you, and how does it flavor your day-to-day work as a tester or as a manager of testers?
Right. For me, personally, it just tells me that what I know now can be better, right? There's a lot more to learn, but there's 7 basic principles of the context-driven school of software testing, and I can probably go through that list, but I'm gonna pick and choose some the ones that have been very valuable to me, right? So the second principle that says that there are good practices in context, but there are no best practices. And I think this is a pretty big misnomer when it comes to, introducing an idea that succeeded somewhere else. And we try to introduce to a place that has a different culture that can apply that. So, having that in mind gives me the idea that, what I know about the product that I'm working with, the product that I'm testing, there will still be a better way to test this as long as I continue to improve, my knowledge of it, as well as I improve the relationships that I have with the people that's, working with me for that project, which then leads to the third principle, saying that people working together are the most important part of any project's context. Right? I mean, we can introduce as many processes, as we can to force people to be agile, like literally standing up or having retros. But if we don't respect the value of what you've done and not bring any, learnings from that into the team and make the team improve, then, it just makes it very invaluable. And I do believe that, good software testing is a challenging intellectual process. Because a lot of times, there's a lot of the conversations that have been happening in the past, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so, where, the tester as a career is now about to die. And then primarily it's because of automation. But if you talk about, if you talk to people such as yourself, and maybe even others who have been very successful with being able to create automation as a solution, as part of the solution in building better software, is that there's the piece that really requires a lot of thinking and a lot of understanding, which is the piece that cannot be automated. So that would just be, like, I guess, a few of the principles that has made a pretty big impact to me. And to be honest with you, the people that I think some of them you've interviewed, like Matt Heuser, for example, he's one of the few guys who have really helped me, you know, you realize the value that I have as a tester, pretty much made me or got me to where I am now because of just, you know, the way they've mentored me in a sense of, you know, asking me why I think this is this or that is that. So it made me question some of the beliefs that I had before when it comes to testing, and just pretty much made me go beyond the ideas that, you know, testing is just doing the same thing over and over again, but it's so much more than that.
I'd like to go back to something you mentioned earlier on in the interview, and that was localization, testing other languages.
Right.
Now, here's another thing I think a lot of companies struggle with, or they have different approaches for. So I don't know, is that something visual validation can help with? Because I heard that you could use that for localization, or what approach do you use for testing other languages within your applications?
So there's, when it comes to localization, based on my experience, I think we can look at it from a purely functional basis where, you know, you have a piece of content that was translated into something, right? So we're going to have to assume that the translation was correct and it's perfectly colloquial, that, you know, we're not insulting people based on our translation. And what we usually do with this now is that we currently have a translation service that just gives us the ability to, you know, scrape that data, convert that into, you know, the CSS selectors and the locators pretty much, and assign that to a specific locator. And then we do the validation because we're, you know, it's a template, a heavily templated based site. So we know what to expect. And the fact that it's a platform for a lot of these other sites, that we know that the naming conventions are definitely still going to be the same. So let's say if we want to compare that, like we have a product, you know, a product page, for example. So we have header, we have a bulleted list of, I guess, the description of what the product can do. So there's a way for us to validate the correctness, right? So we have a master source, or you can say a baseline, and then we just compare that according to the language that we have. So though the tricky part that we've done so far is getting to the point where we have a baseline, and then we can abstract, you know, the localized data out of it, and then somehow combine them back together again and pretty much run it as a data-driven test, you know, to perform comparisons. With regards to visual baselines, we employ the same exact approach, because we can pretty much capture, you know, all the data of the site that's already in that language. We upgrade that site and perform the comparison. So at this point, if there's a difference in the characters for some reason, Apply Tools will definitely catch that. But when it comes to the correctness of the actual translation, that's something that's already been done for us, you know, even before that copy got to the sites.
You've been a director of test engineering. You're a software test manager. I interview a lot of people, and I get asked questions all the time from my blog, you know, what skills should I be working on? So are there any skills you see when you're trying to hire people that you would love more people to have, or that you find that it's hard to find, that you think every tester should have, or you think there should be more people with that type of knowledge set?
The key that I've really been, most of the people that work for me that have been very successful, or that worked with me that has been very successful, are the ones who have that curiosity and the ones that are really fast learners. And a lot of times, you know, they're not afraid to experiment. They're not afraid to fail. They're not. And one thing that's really common from these folks is that they learn for the better. Because, I mean, you can put in your resume, or you can show that you have the skill to know how to use something, but considering how fast-paced our world is now when it comes to the turnover of technology and the knowledge of using that technology, I definitely prefer testers who are very independent in their learning and can pretty much think on their feet.
Oh, man. That's such a great answer. And that's what I try to pull out of when I'm interviewing someone, because I don't need someone that knows everything, knows every technology. I just need them to be able to Google something on right. their own and not have you wait for them, you to tell them, look, you need to find this out, or they're waiting for training, or they're waiting for a college course. That's never going to happen. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge, because you can see really adverse effects of people who, you know, who don't have the initiative to learn. These are the folks who will always be waiting for a requirement to be explained for them before they can actually test something. Yep. So, like, as a manager, I hate being such a micromanager. Yep. I cannot stand micromanaging other people. I want people to be able to, you know, bring their own ideas, or even challenge me with, you know, with better ideas. I mean, I try to keep up to speed with the technologies that were used when it comes to testing, but also I do stay in the trenches with the testers as well, and, you know, having the experience to just be up to date with what are we actually doing and understanding what our challenges are, because I think that's also one of the challenges when you jump into management, because you're really technically no longer testing, but it's now a different you now have a different job, you know, so to speak. But so if you don't keep up to date with whatever everyone is doing, then you definitely will lose that edge.
Oh, great advice. And I agree with you 100%. It's one of my pet peeves, actually, that even people will come to me, Joe, what happens if I do this? I'm like, well, have you tried it? And they're like, no. So I try and say, this is what happens. You could have done that, but you've been waiting around, you know, for 8 hours. I don't get it, but I guess people are different. But still, it just drives me nuts.
Yeah, there's definitely some people who have, you know, different ways in learning. I mean, there are some people where you just give them a very high level idea and they can run with it. And there's also some people where, you know, you have to work with them patiently and, you know, be more of a mentor more than anything. But of course, you expect them to not stay that way. You want them to be, you want to see a sign of their maturity when it comes to doing their work by being more independent, and I think as a manager, that's something that I always try to you know, to look for. I mean, I really learned a lot, especially after I had my first kid, and after that kid started growing, there's a lot of learning experience that you can have by, oh, I actually need to explain this, because like all the biases that I have, or it's all the understanding that I have for a given concept, that person might not actually know or understand it that way. So there's a need for you to align when it comes to knowledge, but it's really up to that person to do whatever he or she can with that knowledge in hand.
Before we go, is there one piece of actual advice you can give someone to improve their software testing efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you.
Right. So I'm going to answer that starting from the end. You can contact me via Twitter. You can reach out to me via Skype. But please do reach out to me through Twitter. My Twitter handle is Perze. That's Perze. And that's my first name. But with regards to the piece of advice, don't ever stop learning. That's the one thing that, you know, I would encourage anyone that's in the software testing field. Now that we have a very accessible and connected world, you can actually find a lot of authors, people who are pretty much experts in our field that you can easily reach out to in Twitter or Facebook. And I've always seen, you know, these people like Matt Heuser, James Bach, Michael Bolton. These folks are people that you could that talk back. You know, they're not just you don't hit an expert wall when you ask them a question, but they do work with you and help you with your interest if you are interested in improving and becoming a software tester. The other piece of advice that I can give is that You know, as a tester, don't keep the knowledge to yourself. If there's something that you can share to the rest of the, you know, the community, you know, participate and share. So if you don't have a blog yet, please do. I know it takes a couple of tries to be able to write. I'm struggling with it. But as long as you don't, you know, keep this knowledge to yourself and share, that's also another opportunity to learn. And I guess lastly, there's a lot of like tester meetups that are slowly starting to pop up now. And I definitely would encourage you or anyone to participate. I particularly belong to the NYC Testers Meetup. I'm one of the founders of that meetup. And we have something that we've scheduled that's coming up usually on a monthly basis. So check us out if you're within the NYC metropolitan area. But if you're in other areas, there's definitely also other, you know, testing meetups that, you know, just give you a sense of community that, you know, as a tester, you're not the only one that's struggling through the challenges of sometimes only having a dissenting opinion in a software development team. So I guess those three things are my advice.
Thank you, Percy, for your test management automation awesomeness. The links to everything of value that we talked about in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/92. And while you're there, make sure to click on the Sign Up Now free button to learn all about Sauce Labs' awesome products and services. And if this episode has helped you in any way, why not share it with a friend or coworker by heading on over to testtalks.com and clicking on the sharing buttons there for all types of ways to get automation awesomeness delivered automatically to your earbuds every week. So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.